You are listening to an American Free Press podcast.
Joining me on the line from Rasht, Iran, is Kourash Ziabari, an Iranian journalist and writer who just recently wrote a great piece that I saw online. Kourash, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, David, for this precious opportunity.
That's very nice. You live in, as I mentioned earlier, a city called Rasht, which I never knew anything about, and I did a little research on it. It's absolutely fascinating. Too bad the people in the U.S. government don't spend time reading the stuff, because if they did, then they might be able to understand that sanctions make no sense at all, which your article clearly pointed out, and that Iranians are just regular people like everybody else. But for some reason, and that's what we're going to talk about, that's not the case. But Rasht, I just want to mention this for the listeners, it's up in the north, it's on the southwest coast of the Caspian Sea, right?
Exactly.
And it's the largest city on Iran's Caspian Sea coast, and it's a major trade center. Very interesting here, the history. I'm not going to get into that, but I would recommend that listeners look it up, and it's spelled R-A-S-H-T. It's kind of a warm climate, I noticed, and not just Farsi is spoken there, but another language is spoken called Galeki, is that right?
Exactly, Galeki.
The city itself of Rasht, I guess, is about 1 million people, is that right?
Almost 1 million people. It has increased in recent years.
The culture of consumerism is prevalent among the people of Rasht. Is that accurate?
Exactly.
You guys aren't the type of city that I guess Americans who depend on the mainstream media would imagine Iran is, with the mullahs running around and dictating every one of your movements. Is that the case?
I don't think so.
What do we know here in the United States? But unfortunately, the mainstream media is controlled by a few rich families who have a couple of things in common. We'll get into that later. But your article was terrific, and I just want to get into it right now. But before we do, for the benefit of the listeners, just give them a little bit of background about you, who you are, your history, and what you do.
I've been a journalist and media correspondent born in a family where both of my parents were journalists. They run a local magazine here, and it has been publishing for more than 20 years. One of the influential local magazines in our city. And I started to cooperate with national newspapers here in Iran when I was almost 13 or 14 years old. And then since 2008, I started cooperation with some international and global newspapers, magazines, and news websites. The list of them is available on my website about me section. But the most important media outlets for which I have written articles and conducted interviews are Tehran Times, Iran Review, Press TV, Al Arabiya, Your Middle East, Global Research, Foreign Policy Journal, Countercurrents, Counterpunch, and a couple of other news outlets and magazines. My articles and interviews have been published in more than 10 countries and some 45 news outlets and magazines. I'm currently 22 years old, married 3 years ago with my classmate when we were studying English literature at the University of Gilan, which is the largest public university in the northern Iran. So far, I have interviewed more than 200 international renowned journalists, academicians, university professors, and thinkers, public intellectuals. I have listed the name of some of them on my website, and also I'm collecting all of these interviews and articles on my website, which was launched 2 or 3 weeks ago, and I'm honored to have had the opportunity to interview former Mexican President Vicente Fox, figures such as their linguist and political analyst Noam Chomsky, journalist Karen Greenwald, and a number of other people, the list of which are available on my website, as well as some 15 or more than 15 interviews with Nobel Prize laureates in chemistry, medicine, physics, which were published in Danishmand magazine, Iran's oldest scientific publication. And most of my journalistic activities are related to doing interviews with such people. If you go to my website about page, you will find a list of my interviewees, and all things are available there. And I appreciate any comments, any criticism, any suggestions, and I'm very glad to have the opportunity to be on your show, David.
Wow, a man after my own heart. And 22. Is that what you said? 22?
Yes, exactly.
Well, first let me say congratulations on marrying your high school sweetheart or your college sweetheart or university sweetheart. But 22 and you've done all this stuff?
Well, I think atmosphere and environment of my family has contributed to the achievements, if I can call them achievements, which I have made so far. I started writing articles and doing interviews since I was very young. And actually, it was the persuasion of my family members who wanted me to become a journalist. Since I started writing for local and national newspapers and magazines in Iran, I didn't have any idea of becoming an international journalist someday, but now I'm trying my best to achieve journalistic success and achievements and become somebody for myself and somebody who can contribute to international global peace and to acquainting the global public with the hidden and concealed realities of Iran as the country which I believe is the most misrepresented and most misunderstood country on the face of the world map. Because as you mentioned earlier, the mass media in the West, the mainstream media, don't allow the people in the West to be aware of the realities of Iran. And all they hear about Iran is that Iran is a country that is pursuing a nuclear program aimed at producing nuclear weapons, that Iran wants to wipe Israel off the world map, that Iran is a terrorist country, is an aggressive country with violent people. But none of these allegations are true. As you know, Iran has a culture and civilization of more than 7,000 years with matchless and unrivaled contributions to world peace, world science, world culture, and people all around the world have heard about the names of Rumi, Khayyam, Ferdowsi, Avicenna, and people like them who were all born in Iran and are the honors of my country.
You said that Iran was the most misunderstood and most misrepresented country in the world.
Yes.
Who's to blame for that?
Well, I think the problem with Iran started some 33 years ago when Iranians took to the streets to call for the ouster of the U.S.-backed monarch Mohammad Reza Pahlavi, who was one of the most staunch allies of the United States in the Persian Gulf region. Well, people brought to power a popular government which was led by clerics, and the United States didn't favor that. It started to nip this revolution in the bud, and for that purpose, it persuaded the Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein to invade Iran and launch a very painful war against Iran that claimed the lives of more than 500,000 Iranians. And I have credible information suggesting that more than 27 countries assisted Saddam Hussein during those 8 years of war against Iran, including all the countries of the European Union and many Arab countries. And well, that imposed war failed to topple the Iranian government and remove from power the clerics who were ruling the country, and failed to dismantle the newly born revolution. After that, a number of other factors contributed to the deterioration of ties between Iran and the United States and the Western countries. And I'm not going to actually delve into these historical matters because it needs a very elaborate and, of course, time-consuming discussion. But at any rate, today Iran is targeted by the mass media around the world, even in the Arab countries which are supposed to be Iran's allies, but they are running a massive propaganda campaign against Iran, portraying Iran as a country which is ruled by extremist fundamentalists, with people who are very aggressive and violent and uncultured and uncivilized. I think that although the Western countries claim that the media and their press are free and not influenced by the government, I think it's not true, actually. The mass media in the West are heavily influenced by the Zionist lobby. They publish falsehood and distorted materials about Iran. They never, ever allow the Western citizens to be aware of Iran's culture, Iran's ancient civilization, the modern cosmopolitan lifestyle in Iran, and the contributions which Iranians are making to the international community. Thousands of Iranians are living in the United States peacefully in a very friendly manner with their American counterparts. They are enrolled in universities as students, working as faculty members, scientists, journalists, academicians, and very active and very impressive members of the community, but these are not mentioned in the mass media in the West. the fact that Iran's culture is very sophisticated and very brilliant and delightful culture is never mentioned in the mass media about Iran's music, Iranian cinema, Iranian painting, Iranian carpets, weaving industry, Iranian poetry, and the first contributions of Iranians to the international community. And many people around the world even don't differentiate between Iran and Iraq. They think that these two are the same country, and many of them don't know that the contemporary Iran is homeland to the ancient Persian civilization. I think that a lasting, a comprehensive, and a fruitful dialogue between Iran and the United States can effectively contribute to the resolution of conflicts, to clearing up misunderstandings. But first of all, the United States should learn that Iranians are people which do not tolerate pressure and blackmailing. Are people which have always learned to be independent and self-reliant. And Iranians are a people which have always tried to be determining their own destiny without foreign intervention. Maybe it might be interesting for you to know that despite the fact that Iran is portrayed as a state sponsor of terrorism, in the past two centuries, Iran has never invaded nor attacked any of its neighboring countries. And while the state of Israel has attacked at least 5 or 6 countries surrounding it and is continuing to occupy the Palestinian territories, to occupy Golan Heights of Syria, of continuing to issuing war threats against Iran, and the international community keeps silent about these aggressive and belligerent war threats, which are contravening the UN Charter and the essence and spirit of UN Charter. But no single condemnation has been issued by the Security Council in response to these threats. And in these past 8 years that Iranians elected President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad as the president, well, the tensions between Iran and West somehow increased. But I remember that when Mr. Sayyid Mohammad Khatami was president, who was a reformist figure, and Iran was cooperating with the United States in Afghanistan, in Iraq, and President Khatami tried to reach out to the Western countries and to establish dialogue with them, traveled to many European countries. At the same time, the U.S. President George W. Bush branded Iran as part of an axis of evil. This is while a reformist figure was ruling Iran, Mohammad Khatami, and Iran had actually taken up a policy of detente and rapprochement with the West, but no result was yielded, and the West continued its belligerence toward Iran. And the belligerence increased and ratcheted up during the tenure of President Ahmadinejad because he adopted a foreign policy which was based on somehow confrontation with the West. I don't endorse this foreign policy, but I think that even if a reformist figure such as Mir Hossein Mousavi were elected in the 2009 presidential elections, no difference could have taken place, because the problem of the United States with Iran, the problem of the Western nations with Iran, is not a problem with the strategies and tactics. It's a problem with the principles and the very foundation of Islamic Republic, and that Iran is a country that defies Washington. In my interview with Noam Chomsky, he told me a very interesting statement. He said that Iran is pressured because of its independence and disobedience. And we see that today Iran is the single country in the world, along with a handful of other countries in Latin America and also in some parts of the region we are living in the Middle East. There are only a handful of countries which are adopting an independent and somehow non-aligned policy toward the United States and the West, such as Cuba, which has been long under the hard-hitting sanctions of the United States, and it is trying to defy the calls of Washington. It has so far refused to be dominated by the United States, and it is paying the price for that. The great and big superpowers have always been accused of adopting double standards, and this is unfortunately the essence and the reality of today's foreign policy decision-making. If Iran is being blamed for its human rights record, then why shouldn't Saudi Arabia be blamed for the same thing? In Saudi Arabia, the women are not allowed to drive cars, to hold governmental positions and are deprived of many social and civil liberties and freedoms. But in Iran, until a few weeks ago, we had a female minister, the Minister of Health. Girls make up some 60% of the university students. Many sensitive positions in the government, in local governments, in provincial governments are held by women, and the women are allowed to take part in elections, something which many Arab countries in the region have so far denied their female population. The problem of the United States with Iran is not the problem of human rights. If press freedom is restricted in Iran, it is the same in China, it is the same in Russia, it is the same in Saudi Arabia, in Bahrain, the host to U.S. Navy's Fifth Fleet. But no voice is raised to criticize this hypocritical policy toward the freedom of press. Iran is the only country that is being blamed for imposing restrictions on the media because Iran is not an ally of Washington. And the same goes with the human rights issue, the same goes with the issue of terrorism. If Iran is supporting groups such as Hezbollah or Hamas, which I don't believe are terrorist organizations, the Israeli regime is doing the same, not through supporting terrorist organizations, but through being a terrorist state itself, by relentlessly killing innocent children, women, civilians on a daily basis, and by refusing to adhere to its international obligations, by refusing to adhere to the Security Council resolutions, which call on it to bring its nuclear facilities under the IAEA safeguard, to retreat from the occupied territories, to refrain from displacing the Palestinian refugees and not allowing them to return to their country. So if Iran is a state sponsor of terrorism, Israel is as well. But no voice is raised to protest Israel because you will be accused of anti-Semitism. I was reading one of Samuel Huntington's articles in which all of these points were emphasized very clearly, and that the superpowers are the masters of hypocrisy and double standards. I think among all the Arab nations of the Persian Gulf, which are close allies of Washington, Iran is the most democratic and the freest country in the region in terms of civil liberties, in terms of press freedom, in terms of many other things. I think the United States should revise its policy toward Iran because in the long run it will suffer. The people of the world are gradually being accustomed of the propaganda campaign of the United States and its Western allies against Iran, and after some time they will realize that what these media are propagating is falsehood and untruth. So I think people of the world, especially the people in the United States and other Western countries, should dedicate some time to study the history of our region, our turbulent region, the Middle East, and to figure out the hypocrisies and double standards of their governments. In the recent days, we have heard of the French forces bombarding Mali in Africa under the guise of combating Al-Qaeda. Isn't this terrorism? Isn't bombing civilians in an African country in a failed state such as Mali the sponsorship of terrorism? Drone attacks. So far, the United States has launched drone missions in countries such as Pakistan, Afghanistan, Somalia, Yemen, and nobody has raised a voice to say that, oh, this is terrorism as well. They are killing innocent civilians under the guise of combating Al-Qaeda, but the people who are being killed are innocent civilians, not Al-Qaeda members. The United States in the recent years has funded and assisted militarily and financially groups such as MKO, the Mujahideen-e-Khalq organization, or Jundallah, who are responsible for the lives of thousands of Iranians. You have heard about the assassination of Iranian nuclear scientists in the recent years. 5 nuclear scientists have been murdered by agents connected to the United States and Israel. Isn't this state sponsorship of terrorism? Interestingly, the International Atomic Energy Agency and the United Nations Security Council issue statements and resolutions list the name of Iran's nuclear scientists, and only 4 months later, these scientists will be killed. Isn't this state sponsorship of terrorism? MKO, the group which has been responsible for the lives of more than 40,000 Iranians since the beginning of Iran's revolution in 1979. It has killed Iran's former prime minister, Iran's former president, Iran's former judiciary chief, and many tens of hundreds of civilians, and it has received cash and arms from the United States. Seymour Hersh has elaborately demonstrated these facts and figures in his research that the United States has assisted MKO to carry out terrorist activities and operations inside Iran and acts of sabotage. And nobody says that this is a state sponsorship of terrorism. Why? Because the United States has always introduced itself as a beacon of freedom and democracy, and everybody believes that. A very, very funny thing to say that at the same time as introducing itself as sponsor of world peace, the United States possesses a stockpile of more than 12,000 nuclear warheads. But Iran so far hasn't ever produced a single atomic bomb, which it is being accused of doing. And we all know that Israel is the sole possessor of nuclear weapons in the Middle East. Also, countries such as Pakistan and India. But nobody pressures them, nobody focuses on them, nobody accuses them of terrorism, only because the United States wants to dominate Iran, to bring Iran under its control, to make Iran a client state like it was prior to the revolution 33 years ago, and only because the United States wants to extend its imperial umbrella in the Middle East. And my final statement to your dear listeners, I invite all of them to search for the background and history of Persian civilization, to get acquainted with Iranian culture, Iranian cinema, Iranian painting, Iranian sculpture, Iranian calligraphy, Iranian music, the beautiful and matchless celebration of Nowruz. That is the New Year celebration in Iran and was registered as a UNESCO Intangible Cultural Heritage 2 years ago. The celebration which brings people from all ethnic minorities, all religions and all political belongings in Iran together and unites them. The people should search for these things, should refer to independent media, should refer to independent sources to get familiar with the realities of Iran. Has Iran ever attacked any country? Has Iran ever dropped a bomb on the civilians of a foreign country? No, never ever. Has Iran ever deployed troops to other countries? No. Ron Paul, the former U.S. congressman, said that the United States has troops and soldiers and military bases in some 130 countries. Isn't it militarism? Isn't it imperialism? Isn't it terrorism? But Iran, a peaceful country that has never deployed a single soldier in a foreign country. We should think about these facts and compare the truths and reach to a fair, balanced, and impartial conclusion.
That was great. I'm so glad that I didn't interrupt you. Well, I wouldn't have done it anyway. That was a mouthful, but you did it. You hit on a lot of points that I wanted to talk about. If any Americans know Iranians, what they'll find out or what they might already know is that Iranians are incredibly successful people. I know several of them here in the United States, and they're doctors, physicists, whatever. Professional, it's a professional group of people. Of course, not all, that would be generalizing, but a large number of them, at least the ones that are in the United States or had come to the United States. But one of the things that you didn't mention in great detail was the effect that the sanctions are having on the people of Iran. You say here in your article that we are not here to give a value judgment on which party is doing the right thing, but one thing is for sure, which is that the Iranian people are the only victims of this inexplicable hostility and animosity toward Tehran and Washington. And you went through the history of the sanctions, which started with Jimmy Carter after the embassy was stormed. Not very many Americans know about the CIA's overthrow of your legitimately elected prime minister, Mossadegh, and I don't expect they'll ever know, so I don't have any hope that they will know, but at any rate, even if they did know, I don't think it would help. But you say here that the sanctions were not lifted after Iran released all the hostages. That was, of course, the day that Reagan was sworn in as president. And you said that the United States astonishingly tightened the grip of sanctions on Iran, exacerbating the life of innocent civilians at a critical time when Saddam Hussein was bombing Iranian cities on a daily basis. And that was amazing to me. And again, it all gets to the people who are suffering. And I just want to cite a couple of things here from your article. You say that there's staggering hyperinflation with the price of consumer goods increasing twofold and threefold every single day. And that if you consider the number of civilians killed every year in Iran in deadly air crashes, a direct result of the U.S. embargo that makes it impossible for Iran to buy new and modern aircraft and refresh its aging, outdated fleet. You had interviewed somebody for the article, and they said especially the poor and the majority lower middle class population, they're the ones that are being hardest hit by these sanctions. Yeah. And of course, the sick, the elderly, children, and the working class in general suffer the most as a result of these sanctions. That was from another guest that you interviewed. It's hitting regular people, and that's why you titled the article Collective Punishment. We can see that, obviously, it is hurting Iran. Is it hurting Rasht at all?
The sanctions are hitting people in every single city in Iran because they are denying Iranian people access to foodstuffs, medicine, many other humanitarian goods. You may have heard that many European and Western air carriers have suspended their flights from and to Iran. And it is making very difficult and very painstaking for Iranians to travel to foreign countries, to Western countries, and also the process of the issuance of visa for Iranian nationals is being hardened and very difficult every day. People don't have the ability to buy many goods, and price of many goods is increasing on a daily basis. Medicine vital for many diseases such as cancer, such as thalassemia, hemophilia, psychological disorders. The medicine for these kinds of diseases are becoming rare and rare every day, and people can't find them on the drugstores. And this is the direct result of the sanctions. People can't travel to foreign countries because the air operators and air carriers such as Air France, Lufthansa, KLM, British Airways have suspended their flights from and to Iran. Many people who should travel to foreign and Western countries for medical treatment cannot do so, cannot travel because there are no flights available in Iran's airports. And also in the international airport of Rasht. In terms of other impacts the sanctions are having on the people, I can say, for example, we could buy, for example, chicken for daily consumption 3 months ago for about $4 a kilo, and today it has become $10 a kilo. And this is the direct result of the sanctions because Iran imports chicken from India, from China, from Russia, and other countries. And the financial difficulties which the sanctions have caused for the people and for the government has made it impossible for the country to import goods on a regular price. I just interviewed Professor Steve Hankey a few weeks ago, who told me that currently Iran is facing a monthly inflation of about 70%. It is unbelievable. It is incredible. Let me give you an example. The goods which we bought, for example, cooking oil, red meat, and everything. The price of these goods are being increased and ramping up every day, literally every day. The price of cooking oil was something yesterday, and when you go to the market today, you see that it has increased twofold, threefold. This is very thought-provoking. Why should this have happened? Should the people, should ordinary citizens be punished in such a brutal and atrocious manner only because the United States wants to remain at odds and hostile toward Iran unless Iran submits to its calls and halts and suspends its uranium enrichment program? Who can guarantee that the United States will not be demanding Iran further concessions after the suspension of uranium enrichment? This is why the Iranian politicians, Iranian leaders are very suspicious and skeptical toward the U.S. politicians and U.S. leaders, because they say that who can give us guarantee that the United States will not be demanding further concessions in terms of its foreign policy relations with countries such as Syria, Lebanon, is supporting of the Palestinian cause. All of these things can be raised in further negotiations. And in terms of the scarcity of medicine, I have personally known many people, my own friends, who are suffering from very chronic and interminable diseases, who are in dire need of medicine imported from countries such as Canada, Belgium, and the United States itself. These medicines are not imported to the country anymore. Isn't this the collective punishment of Iranians? And isn't this contrary to the principles of human rights? If the United States considers itself a proponent of human rights, so So then the Iranian people are human beings as well. Why shouldn't their rights be respected? Why shouldn't they be given equal rights to that of other people around the world? Why should they be denied access to foodstuff and medicine and clothing as well? People in the past used to buy, for example, new clothes every month or every 2 months or every 3 months, but today it's impossible to buy new clothing because they are not being imported anymore. Many other things. The industries are going bankrupt every day. The carpet industry, the agricultural workers, they are losing their jobs. For example, in my city, my own city, I have heard in the past few months that many factories were closed down because they cannot import equipment and industrial accoutrements from other countries, and they are going bankrupt. The printing industry, the carpet industry, many other industries are facing a very exacerbating situation, a very heart-rending situation, and this is the direct result of the sanctions, and nobody says that these poor people are human beings as well. You remember that when the former U.S. Secretary of State Madeleine Albright was asked whether the sanctions on Iraq after the Persian Gulf War were affecting the lives of Iraqi children, Iraqi citizens, she replied soberly by saying that it is worth it. I think if Hillary Clinton is asked the same question, she will respond by saying that Iranians should pay the price.
Right, that was when they asked Albright if she felt that the death of 500,000 Iraqi children was worth it, and she said yes.
Yeah.
Amazing. What a disgrace to humanity. And they get the airwaves, too. How big of a role is Israel playing? I know you mentioned before the Zionist-controlled media, and of course, I agree with that 100%. Anybody who will study this will find out that that's clearly the case. But how do you think Israel is involved in the pressure that it is able to apply to the United States? Not just the spies that they recruit in your country or the Mossad agents who slip across the border and assassinate people. There were a rash of assassinations, I believe it was last year. Physicists, yeah. Nuclear scientists, young guys with young wives and young children. And of course, these people, they just don't have any feeling. I have my own theory about why that is, but how big of a role is Israel playing in the misery that's a part of now Iran's everyday life?
I think Israel is directly responsible for the pressures being imposed and being unleashed on Iranian people. For many years, for at least one decade, the Israeli regime was pressuring the United States to launch a military strike against Iran. And I remember John Bolton, the former U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, saying that before the inauguration of new president, the Israeli regime will attack Iran. It was when President Obama had been elected as president back in 2008, and he had predicted that Israel will attack Iran before the inauguration of new president, but it didn't happen. However, we are sure that Israel is on a daily basis pressuring the United States to, first of all, define a red line for Iran, which was manifested in Netanyahu's speech to the United Nations General Assembly last year with his ridiculous drawing and cartoon, actually, which he presented to the leaders of the world at the General Assembly. And the United States, because of its being influenced by the Zionist lobby, by AIPAC, ADL, and other Zionist alliances, is trying to impose sanctions to appease and domesticate Israel instead of going into war with Iran. I think because the United States is incapable of adopting an independent foreign policy, is imposing these hard-hitting and brutal sanctions against Iran in order to satisfy Israel, because the Washington leaders know that going into war with Iran will be very costly for the United States, and it may be followed by retaliation by Iran on U.S. bases in the Persian Gulf and also on Israel. So in order to prevent a calamity from happening, it imposes sanctions and renews them every day, and this is just made to appease Israel. And you may have heard that they haven't even refrained from putting restrictions on Iranian media. The United States has recently ordered Intelsat satellite provider to take Press TV and other Iranian TV channels off air, and it imposed a set of sanctions against Islamic Republic of Iran Broadcasting, IRIB, and also other satellite providers in Europe and Asia have taken Iranian channels off air, and this is a war on free speech. This is another manifestation of U.S. hypocrisy. If the United States really cares for freedom of speech, then so why should it launch such a funny war on free speech, and why should it bring disgrace to itself and blemish its reputation? reputation. It's already tarnished reputation with such sanctions against Iranian media. If you are at odds with Iranian government, then you should at least allow Iranians to have their voice in the international community. But they don't allow even the Iranian media from operating freely. And you have also heard that last year, Ofcom, Britain's broadcasting regulator, ordered that Press TV's activities should be suspended in Britain. And these are all the things which are being done on a daily basis. Animosities are being renewed every day. And I read somewhere that managers of Eutelsat and Ofcom are connected with Israeli agents. The British royal family is somehow influenced by the Zionist lobby, and it was under their pressure that they're imposing such restrictions on Iranian media. And of course, we can trace the footsteps of Israel in this sanctions regime on Iran, and also in the assassination of Iranian scientists and other acts of sabotage and showing panner in the works of Iran. So I think that Israel has played a significant role in what Washington is doing to the innocent Iranian citizens.
Thank you for, again, that thorough answer. Now, the corporate-controlled and captured and Zionist media here in the United States constantly drones on about President Ahmadinejad saying that he wants to wipe Israel off the face of the map. Can you please, for the listeners, give us the actual language that he said and then translate that into English?
Yeah, well, it was actually a quotation from the founder of Islamic Revolution, Imam Khomeini, who said that regime ishghalgar Quds bayad az sahne ruzegar mahv sharad. And we all know that the actual translation for this sentence is that this regime occupying Al-Quds or Jerusalem should be vanished from the pages of history. This is the translation. But why the Israeli regime and why the United States exaggerated the impressiveness and extent of this sentence? First of all, we should bear in mind that this sentence was initially stated by a spiritual leader, by a religious leader, not a political leader. I do not agree with President Ahmadinejad saying that he should not have said such a thing. But even if he said such a thing in reference to the original statement by Imam Khomeini, he should be interpreted accurately, not mistranslated and misinterpreted the way the US media and Israeli media did. He never said that Israel should be wiped off the world map, but he said that this regime occupying Jerusalem should be vanished from the pages of history, and we all know that it has different implications, it has different meaning, and it does not mean that Iran wants to launch a military strike against Israel. And except for this sentence, I have never ever heard of any Iranian politician or leader saying anything threatening the security of Israel. But we all know that Israeli leaders on a daily basis are recurrently issuing war threats against Iran, are recurrently warning Iran against a possible military strike on its nuclear facilities and even a ground invasion. And we can differentiate between what the Israeli leaders are saying and what President Ahmadinejad has said, and what implications do these two approaches have.
Thank you again for covering that in great detail. Do you believe that there are U.S.-based Iranians applying pressure to the U.S. government, just as Israel does, to cripple Iran?
I think that, unfortunately, the Iranian community in the United States is not too much united and well-organized. Many Iranians, hundreds of thousands of Iranians, live in the United States. But first of all, I think they have not well organized and established an accomplished organization or some NGO or other types of groups, advocacy groups, to further their demands. Although I have just heard that the organization overseen by former U.S. Attorney General Ramsey Clark has called on the U.S. government to lift sanctions against Iran and stop showing war threats against Iran, and some peace groups in the United States are doing a good job in preventing the United States from doing a foolish thing of attacking Iran or imposing hard-hitting sanctions against Iran. But the Iranians, I think they are mostly busy with their own personal affairs, and one thing is that Iranians in the United States, as far as I have recognized, are somehow afraid and fearful of losing their positions or their opportunities in the United States as a result of advocating for Iranian government and Iranian people, because unfortunately in the recent years Iranians have been under immense pressure around the world. Iranians have been mistreated in many countries, many Arab countries, many Asian countries, and many European countries. They are easily and without any legal and judicial warrant went arrested on charges of terrorism and posing a threat to the national security of different countries. My own opinion, they fear that by advocating for Iran and by getting united and trying to call for peaceful resolution of conflicts between Iran and the United States, they may fear that they may be ostracized and vilified, because the Iranians today are portrayed, as I said before, as aggressive terrorists, extremists and fundamentalist people, and this is the popular image the United States has depicted of Iranians, and it's not too easy for Iranians to advocate for the rights of their fellow citizens. While even if the world nations know that Israel is a terrorist and is an apartheid regime, it controls the 95% of U.S. media, the majority of U.S. economic corporations, and even if they have not very popular and very positive public image, they can exert influence because of their dominance over the media, over the economy of the United States, over Wall Street, and this is why they can easily change the course of U.S. foreign policy, U.S. portrayal of Iran in the media and other things.
You painted a pretty sad picture of your country and what the sanctions are doing to it. Give me a time frame. When is it going to collapse? Is it going to collapse? It sounds like it's going to. Something's going to happen there. I mean, prices can't keep rising forever. What do you foresee happening in a year? Can something happen in a year, 6 months? What's the prognosis?
I think that the upcoming presidential elections due in June this year will be determining for the future of Iran. I really hope that a reformist figure such as Mohammad Reza Aref, the former vice president of Iran, who is a moderate and reformist figure, will be elected. Under his management, Iran can somehow try to lobby for the lifting of the sanctions, making some progress in nuclear negotiations. And I think under his administration, Iran can change some things. I'm not saying this because I totally oppose President Ahmadinejad's foreign policy or his decisions or his worldview, but I think that today Iran needs some moderation in foreign policy. It should sit at negotiation table with the West, with the United States, and persuade them to lift the sanctions and create some easiness for the people. If he is elected, I think the problems will be solved to some extent. I'm very optimistic about the future because the figures who have been mentioned as the possible candidates of the upcoming elections are promising people. I have also read that Obama has nominated John Kerry for the U.S. Department of State and also Chuck Hagel for Pentagon. And as far as I know, these two people are far more lenient than the predecessors who are now in office. And they have more realistic and more rational viewpoint and attitude towards Iran and the Middle East. And I think that the future will entail more drastic changes, more promising events, but everything will depend on June's presidential elections and who will be elected. If a pro-reform figure is elected, then we can wait for the lifting of the sanctions. But I should warn that the United States and other Western countries should refrain from intervening in Iran's internal affairs by explicitly supporting a certain candidate. They harmed the reputation of reformists in Iran by supporting them in the 2009 presidential elections. They should refrain from doing such a reckless thing. They should attend to their own affairs and let the Iranian people do their job on their own. Finally, I would like to invite all of your listeners to dedicate some time to searching and studying about Iran, and if they ever made the decision to come to Iran, for visiting its numerous historical sites and tourist magnets, I'd be more than delighted to host them in my small home in Rasht.
Thank you. And of course, they would have to like rain, right? Because I didn't mention before that Rasht is known as Rain City, right?
Yes, exactly.
Kurash Ziabari, award-winning Iranian journalist, media correspondent, and peace activist. I want to thank you so much for the time you took out explaining all this to the listeners, and looking forward to having you back, if we could, to consult on other affairs.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much.